Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Donovan Brown. Hey, Donovan.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
My name is Donovan Brown. I'm a senior program manager for DevOps here at Microsoft.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, I know you were. So I'm responsible for basically TFS, or Team Foundation Server, and VSTS, or Visual Studio Team Services.
The product formerly known as Visual Studio Online is the way I like to refer to it as.
Yes, VSO.
Which is quite a bit longer than VSTS.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we used to call it VSO, too, but it had to be the worst named product ever, because I kept looking for my IDE. I mean, everyone did. So I'm glad we changed the name. I don't know why we had to make it longer, but nevertheless. So if you're doing DevOps in those two environments, that's pretty much the world in which I live.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to show you some of the cool things that we've done to help you do that.
Cool.
So one of the things I thought we would talk about is infrastructure as code.
Yes.
Okay, so infrastructure as code is...
And you'll explain what that means.
Yeah, it's basically the concept of taking the infrastructure in which you want to host your application in, and defining it in a file that you can check into source control.
Ooh.
That way, we don't have to worry about that one guy in your organization who knows how to go configure your environment, and then he takes that knowledge with him when he leaves. And now you have this machine that no one could configure or figure out how it actually works. And my God, if something happens to it, then we're going to be in a world of hurt. What we do is we take that knowledge and we codify it by putting it into a script or a recipe or in our tools that we have here, we're going to put it into a JSON file. And those JSON files create what we call an Azure Resource Management template. And then we can actually give that to the tools, which I'll show you here later. And it will literally spin up that entire environment for us in Azure every time that we need it. And if we wanted to, tear it down or just verify that it is the way that it's supposed to be.
So a predefined environment that we can spin up anytime we need it, which in some ways sounds like a container.
It's not necessarily a container. We could use this to actually spin up containers as well. But this is, say for example, you wanted to have a Windows VM. We could actually tell in our ARM template. Matter of fact, let me show you how you do that.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to use some of the new tooling. So we're going to go to File, New Project. And inside of here, we have this new node here that comes with the Azure SDK that allows me to have this new project type called an Azure Resource Group. So if I want to go ahead and add this to my solution here, what it's going to do is it's going to prompt me with this dialog box. Even though we're working with JSON, you don't actually have to touch the JSON with your hands, right? Which is really nice, because JSON is just a mountain of text. And you know, if we're humans and we go in there and we touch it, we could leave off a quote or a comma, and then all of a sudden it doesn't compile correctly. So to your point, though, you mentioned containers. And in here, we actually happen to have a Docker template, which would stand up a Docker Linux machine for us in Azure, and then actually configure it with the right certificates so that I could then run containers on that particular Linux host. In our scenario, we were actually just dealing with a website.
Okay.
So as you see here, we have the ability to spin up a website. If that website was using SQL Server, we could actually tell it I needed to spin up that as well. And there's another concept that's really important called desired state configuration, or the best practices called configuration as code. So I kind of think of infrastructure as code and configuration as code as two complementary technologies that you use together to basically stand up your environment. Because if you use infrastructure as code alone, you would spin up a Windows machine, but it wouldn't be ready to run IIS, for example.
Right.
It wouldn't have the right ports open. It wouldn't have .NET Framework installed. But what we can do here, let's just do that one. That's kind of a fun one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say I would like to have a Windows server, which is here. And what it's going to do is it's going to go build the template I was talking about, which says, I now understand what you want us to build, which is actually a Windows server. And like I said, you don't have to touch the JSON, because what we do is we bring up this graphical user interface here that actually shows you all the resources that it just realized that you actually need to spin it up.
Cool.
So you need a storage account, you need an IP address, you need a NIC card. It's done all that stuff for us. Now, like I said just a moment ago, that's just a Windows server.
Right.
It doesn't have IIS installed yet, doesn't have the right version of .NET Framework. We're going to use desired state configuration to do that. And what I can do is say, I would like to add an additional resource. That resource is actually going to be a, and as you can see through, I scroll through here, almost everything that you can do in Azure you can see here. I would like it to be a desired state configuration. And DSC is just an extension on top of PowerShell. The same way that I can codify the infrastructure in which I want my application to run, this allows me to codify the configuration of that infrastructure, what ports are open and things like that. So what I'm going to say is I would like this one to install IIS. I don't like putting spaces in my names. And now what it's actually going to do for me is it actually writes the desired state configuration for me in such a format that these are sample nodes that you can actually add. So this is all the stuff that you can tell it to do. I need to enable custom logging. I need to enable HTTP redirection. I need to install, for example, the .NET Framework 4.5. So this might be something I'd want to do. And what's really cool is I can just simply copy this and paste it outside of the comment, because this is where the comment began. So I'm just going to paste it here. And I also want to make sure that it's a Windows server, I mean a IIS server. So I'm going to copy this here. So with just this code, I'm saying I want you to take whatever Windows server that I give this file to, and I want you to make sure it has IIS installed, and I want you to make sure that it has the .NET framework installed.
Hmm.
And now what I can do is I can give this template to our tools, which I'll show you here in just a second, mm-hmm. and they'll happily go and execute these for you. So this is now allowing us to codify both our infrastructure and our configuration. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hop over into our tools here inside of VSTS.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our build system. And if I were to go back here and show you some of our completed builds, I ran some of these earlier, so we won't be running them now, but I'll be able to show you everything that's inside of them. This is where I went and I compiled the actual website, so the ASP.NET application. I was also able to run all of my unit tests that were mm-hmm. actually defined inside of there.
Okay.
And I was also able to tell it that I was working on a particular user story or a work item where I told myself, go create a demo for Toolbox today.
Right.
And when I checked this all in and made these really cool associations, so I have traceability from the build to actually the work item to even the lines of code that I committed to make these particular changes. Now, what's really nice about our build system is we can actually build anything with this. So I'm going to go and edit this guy real quick so you can see the anatomy. It's just a list of the tasks that I want it to perform, mm-hmm. which is a great leap forward from our old build system. Our XAML-based build system, although very powerful, was very difficult to customize. So if you wanted to do anything besides a vanilla.NET application,
yeah.
you had to hire a consultant. But what we've done now in our new system is, if you want to do something different than what we have on here, you simply choose the task that you want.
Cool.
And what I love about this is that none of this relates to Microsoft. You're looking at Android,
yeah.
you're looking at Ant, you're looking at Docker and Gradle and Grunt and Gulp, things that you might not necessarily associate with Microsoft. But being the new Microsoft that we are, we actually work with all of this stuff.
That's right.
And we also have very low friction ways to getting you to Azure. And this is the guy that we're basically highlighting today, the Azure Resource Group deployment. Because we created the resource group in Visual Studio,
mm-hmm.
and now we want to be able to go off and deploy that particular item in our build. We can do it in our build or our release. So if you think of build is about compiling the code, running your unit test, and then packaging the output so that we can pass it like a baton in a relay race to the next guy in line of our DevOps pipeline.
Yep.
And that other guy is release management, which is currently in preview, and we're working as hard as we can to get it out of VSTS and onto on-prem. We're going to be trying to get that to you as quickly as we possibly can. So what I've done here is I have a build that has the compilation. It also packages it using these MS build arguments as a zip file that mm-hmm. we can then post inside of Azure. I ran a battery of unit test, and then I basically packaged the output. And this will happen every single time I check in code.
Right.
So this is what we call a continuous integration build. One other thing I like to point out about our build system is that it works with all sorts of different source control systems. So not only does it work with Git, and we have Git inside of VSTS,
yep.
but also GitHub, Bitbucket, Subversion. If you wanted to use Subversion, you could continue to do that as well.
Cool.
And then what we do is we switch over to this guy's cousin, which is basically our release pipeline. So let me hop over here to our release system. And we're going to see that our release system and our build system are very, very similar. So if you come over here and look at our releases, we had a couple of them already run. We have a nice overview screen here that lets you see exactly what version are in flight and where they happen to be. So for example, generally you're going to have QA be a little bit behind prod, but mm-hmm. you know, like for example, 36 will be the next one trying to make its way to prod. And this tool actually manages the movement of that code through all the environments in which you define. And what I did down here for this demo today is I basically created this toolbox demo, continuous deployment. Now, if you squint really hard, this looks exactly like build.
Yeah. Right?
There's only a couple yep. things that we've changed. So the center part is exactly the same. The tasks that you're able to use are exactly the same. And then the way that you edit that information is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've added is a concept of something called an environment. An environment is a logical grouping of all the tasks that you'd like to perform as you promote your code from one environment to the next. It's pretty simple. And I can have as many of these as I like. So mm-hmm. I generally have dev and QA and prod. And after I do that, I can also do something called approvals, which is another concept that's different in release than it is inside of build. For example, I used to work with companies when I was a process consultant whose QA cycle was like 2 weeks long. Right, so the time they got a piece of code to the time that it was completely tested was about 2 weeks
yep.
long. And CI builds by the dev teams, those are happening multiple times a day. But as a QA person with a 2 week QA cycle, I can't take every build that the developers produce because it would invalidate all of my test results that I have to start over again.
Right.
So what we do is we can actually put the QA person as the approver entering their environment. They'll get a notification
okay.
from the system and they will, and the system will say, is it okay, please, Robert, for me to go and touch your environment? And if you say no, well, then it'll say, okay, I'll wait. Or you can say, it is okay, but I want you to do it a week from today when I'm done. And the system will go to sleep, and a week from today, it will wake back up and then go and deploy the new code into your environment. That way, Monday morning, I come in fresh, and I'm ready to test the new bits of code. Now, you can also put someone on the outside. So whereas they're the post approver, which means that, let's say, for example, as the QA lead, I'm responsible for the quality, clearly. And if there's a prod environment after the QA environment, and I found a lot of bugs, I wouldn't want that to go into production.
Right.
And I don't have to be the pre-approver of production. I can simply reject it on the way out of QA. So we give you the ability to have approvers coming in and approvers
going
out.
Will it typically
out.
Be the same person?
That's a good question. It all depends on your organization. And not only does it have to, it can be more than one person. That's a really good question, actually. So here, it can be any collection of groups or people. So I can have individuals here, and then all the individuals would have to approve. Or I could have groups here, and then anyone in that group would be able to approve it. So let's say, for example, you don't want to put Donovan as the approver because I'm about to go on vacation.
Right.
But I'm in a group of people who all have the authority. You could put the group there, and then anyone in the group would have the authority to actually promote it in or out of the environment.
So pre-deployment could be the QA lead, and post-deployment could be the QA manager.
Potentially.
And then it goes to the next step.
Which would be prod, for example.
But you wouldn't put the prod guy as the post-deployment approver. You'd put him as the pre-deployment approver.
You could, absolutely. That's generally how I would do it as well.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
And what's nice is the flexibility is that you would be able to choose as your organization whatever you'd like.
Yeah,
but generally, that is what we would do.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Great. And then after that, we basically go ahead and run through these. And then what I'd like to show here is if we go back and look at some of the other releases that we've already done, we'll be able to see that we give you lots of rich information. For example, we also show you that if it where it is in our pipeline, if it succeeded or not. It also associated it to the work item, so I can see those here. So these are all the features that are in this current piece of code that we're trying to deploy. And we'll be able to diff those for you and determine if I want to roll back, what features would I lose? If I want to promote this forward, what features am I adding to that next environment? And we also associate it back to your commits. So we know exactly what files that you changed as you were trying to promote these particular features.
Right.
So it's a nice traceability from the time I check in code from inside of Visual Studio to the time it's built inside of our build system. And then we hand that off to our release system. And the end result is an application that we have basically running out in Azure. So what I wanted to show you here inside of Azure is actually the resource group that was actually created. And that's one reason that I did it the way that I did. So this is a resource group that has a web app in it. And it allows me to go back. Let's just go and open up this toolbox demo. So this is a resource group that has the web app in it. It also has App Insights, so I can start doing some telemetry that was in part of my template as well. And you might be wondering, well, do I have to use Infrastructure's code to get to this point? And the answer is no. Our tools are smart enough to say, if I wanted to, for example, let's go back real quick to our build. So if I wanted to, for example, just deploy directly after here, I could have, and our tools would have said, hey, the web app that you're asking me to go deploy to doesn't exist yet. I'll just go spin it up for you.
Okay.
But I don't have control over the size. I don't have control over the resource group. There'd be no way for me to scale it up or scale it out through code. It would basically be, here's a generic place for you to go host your web app, and it's convenient, but it doesn't really give me the control that I want.
Right.
By adding Infrastructure's code, I can now look at the configuration and even change it by simply changing a file.
Cool.
Yep. So I just wanted to come and share some of the things that we've been doing on taking a best practice like Infrastructure's code and folding it into our tool set.
So show me a couple places where you edited the configuration or the things that Visual Studio created, because we...
Okay. So if we were to go back to Visual Studio, again, this is the DSC script.
Yeah.
But if I wanted to go in here, if I'm comfortable in JSON, there's nothing stopping me from going in and just modifying the JSON directly. And we have some really good editors. You can not only do it here, but you could also do it in Visual Studio Code, which has a lot of nice IntelliSense for you as well. But then again, what most of us are doing is we're spending our time over here in what we call a JSON outline, because that way we're able to actually visually see all the different resources that we have. For example, here's the DSC script that we added, and here's our virtual machine. And if I wanted to add something or remove something, I can simply use this toolbar at the top, and then I can go and add additional resources to my template.
So where do you specify which storage account, for example?
Good question. So that's actually defined inside of the JSON template. So if we were to open up this JSON template, at the top here, what you're going to see are things like the parameters, and also there's another section called variables. And these variables, as you can see here, here's the disk name that we're going to use. Here's the storage type we're going to use. The storage name is automatically generated for us because a lot of these things have to be unique.
Okay.
So inside of our JSON templates, we actually have the ability to create a unique string for you that you don't have to worry about, that we're going to maintain and make sure that it's globally unique when we create it. So this is how we're able to create the storage account names. They're all stored inside of the JSON
file. Or you
can
substitute in pre-existing ones if you needed to, yes?
Exactly. So that's a good point. So there's a difference between a variable and a parameter.
Yeah.
A parameter, which we defined at the top, can all be overwritten. Not only overridden when we deploy it directly from inside of Visual Studio, but let me show you something because you brought up a really good point. If I go back over here, and let's go back to our release, I'll show you where I was able to override the website name.
So if
I wanted to run this multiple times, I could actually go and change the website name should I wish to. So what I did is on the task that is designed to actually deploy this, which is this guy here, I told it the two templates. Remember the JSON files I was telling you about?
Mm-hmm.
So here's the first JSON file. And then what I did down here is I said, I would like you to use the web app name that I actually defined as a variable as part of my release. So if I come over here to configuration, you'll see that I have this variable defined called web app name. And I called it toolbox demo web app.
There it is.
So if I change this, then when I run this again, it'll spin up an entirely new web app for me.
Cool.
Fantastic. Good question. What else can I show you?
So a question that I always have when I see demos done by you or others, is how does somebody get started figuring out how to do release management, continuous integration, continuous deployment, desired state? I mean, it all makes sense at kind of the abstract level.
Sure.
I totally understand what you're talking about. I have a sense of why someone might use this.
Sure.
But what if I want to learn how to do it? What if we are we've decided as a new shop, or, you know, me and three buddies get together, we're going to build software, and I want to do all this stuff. But from here to there, it's kind of a leap.
It is. And in my role, it has become my responsibility to produce and surface that type of information,
mm-hmm.
because we're not really good at it right now, being perfectly transparent. To figure out how to do a lot
really,
of stuff.
Really, it's really hard for somebody that lives it every day.
Yes.
Like, you go to conferences and you see, you or Brian Randall or, good friends like that talking about this stuff.
Sure.
And he understands this stuff really, 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 really well. But, then ask him to say, okay, release management 101. How do I get started doing this? It's not always easy,
Right.
My wife constantly... I'll say the same thing about life. She'll ask me a simple question, and I'll give her what I thought was a simple answer. But, it's like, okay, I'm here, you're up here.
Right.
Right?
So we do actually...
It's not easy.
Yeah, David Tessar and I actually have done a couple of MVA courses.
Okay.
So Microsoft Virtual Academy is a good place to learn the build. We did that one first.
Okay.
And then we came back afterwards, and we did, I think it actually ended up being a Channel 9 series about 5 or 6 segments of us talking about release management and how to use it,
right.
How to create service endpoints and the whole nine yards. He and I just did a interview on, I have a series here too called DevOps Interviews, mm-hmm. where I interviewed him specifically about infrastructure as code, because we're not the only game in town.
Right.
And what's really interesting and really important to know about our tool set is that it's not just a .NET tool set.
Right.
Everything that I just showed you will work for Linux and Java and Mac and all that good stuff.
Yep.
So there's a lot of good resources, just like your show here too as well, on places you can go online to find some of the resource. Now, I want to make sure that there's some place that you can go on our asset, like a Microsoft web page, and say, Donovan, teach me DevOps.
Right.
And that's what I'm working on that right now.
Okay.
So we basically have devops.visualstudio.com today, and we are basically figuring out what content's going to go there. I'm working with the Rangers and other communities to help mm-hmm. produce a lot of that content so that someone can do exactly what you just asked. Donovan, I really just want to do from nuts to bolts, how do I take something and run it through a DevOps pipeline? And we're working on that content right now.
Cool.
It's my highest priority is to have that landing page so that people can go and do exactly what you just asked.
All right. So we'll put a few of the links you mentioned in the show notes.
Perfect.
To the MBA and others.
Great.
All right, excellent.
I appreciate
it. Cool stuff.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
All right, hope you enjoyed that, and we will see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.